I'm Rudy Ro Dalla Flo Bigliani, along with my partner, Telly TJ Vangeli. This is Cross Vegas. After years of sowing seeds of faith as up-and-coming televangelists, TJ and I crashed into our new endeavor of being social mediators for the kingdom right here in Las Vegas. We're demonstrating the blessing that he wants for you in our latest project of prosperity at Cross Vegas. Come join us as we bring the redemption of riches to the Sin City. After all, what happens here stays in heaven.
Well, hello there, friends. We're coming to you all the way from Daytona, the Motor City, to Tampa Bay, the Magic City. We're reaching out to you today from Las Vegas, the Emerald City. And we are so thrilled to be with you, wherever you may be across these fruited plains. We've got so many irons and so many fires right now. TJ, we are just so inspired, maybe as inspired as we have ever been.
Rudy, we are powered up for this second season of our podcast. We've received dozens of impressions, which means, you know, someone has passed through our website, whether or not they ever subscribed. Just dozens of people have at least had exposure to the idea that they might subscribe to our website, our podcast here, and we are up on our game production-wise, up on our game with new segments, new segment styles, and new segment content that the people have been asking for. Notably, we've got a new segment coming in today that I am so excited about. It is probably our most spiritually impactful segment we've ever done, and it brings us in line with really the mainstream of fringe charismatic theology.
That's right. It really represents the growth we've done from the inside out during this time. It has been a season of growth, and I think that new segment is really just the kind of the representation of so much depth within us.
And really, the new development we explained last episode was our ascent into worldly power on the City Council of Las Vegas, albeit not the city management office, where Cedric Crer easily won election to city manager, but we're in the remainder of the city council that by law hasn't yet been totally abolished, but we won our election in a landslide. It's you, it's me, it's Jolene, though she's been joining the council meetings solely by teleconference still. Haven't actually ever met her in person to this day. But anyway, she's voting. She's making proclamations. We're making some proclamations. We're getting input from the citizens. It is a wonderful time to be in charge.
And I think we really need to make sure everybody knows that we see this as a positive. What the city meant for abolishment, God meant for good. And that's really what's happened with this city council. And I think our time will come around. And for this moment, we are, for such a time as this, we are stepping out in faith to really handle some hard-hitting issues in this city council.
We've been having people approach us, you know, in error, thinking they were going to the city manager's office with their complaints, saying, you know, my pipes are frozen or heated up so much they exploded. And we say, well, just, you know, go five blocks down, up Mesquite Avenue, take a turn towards the north. You'll see the city management office, and there you can bring your real problems. But what happens when you send people away for those prosaic things is you start to get some real in-depth problems from the citizens of Las Vegas. And, you know, we've been open to people tweeting at us, too. You know, I seen Books Banned in Heaven's Library 69 ask us, when are we going to ban the They Day Parade? I didn't even know such a thing existed, and I Googled it, and it actually still does not exist. This gentleman just wants to make sure there's never a They Day Parade in Las Vegas. And I think that's a concern we can address.
Oh, absolutely. And that's exactly why we're in this position at this time. I mean, we've been getting a lot of truth tellers coming through that seek an audience with us, and we're able to respond to their questions and take up their concerns. Kind of a, I guess we call it a supplementary inquiry space, complaint space, feedback space, or as I like to call it, a town hall meeting of an open mic variety. And I feel like we've just been using our position to bring about his good.
The other day we had a feller walk in. I mean, walking maybe putting it too strong a term on it. He was stumbling and somersaulting in. But he was some form of an Elvis impersonator, and it looks like he'd fallen on hard times. And when we could finally get him to put three words together, he said, "They've taken everything." And from this, we deduced that he was referring to how the city management office of Las Vegas has revoked his permit to perform Christian weddings. That's all I could gather out of those three words, but he looked hard bitten by this time from that government oppression.
And after some very deep research, we did find out that there is an issue at many of these chapels in which certain Elvis people have been asked to step down and no longer perform weddings and to no longer fulfill their role as an Elvis. Some type of, I don't know if we call it cease and desist, cease and exist order. You know, it was, as a matter of fact, it was all I could do when that gentleman did come a rolling through to make a Elvis has left the building joke. But anyway, I cracked myself up on that one. Man, my lip was bleeding.
He didn't leave for a while there, though. We wish he left the building, but he sat through our entire meeting. And again, sat is maybe an overstatement. He lay on the floor and hollered at the ceiling while I was trying to communicate with him. But, you know, I think if you're born an Elvis in this country, and there may be some genetic component to this I'm hearing, you should have the same rights as any American, as any Las Vegan American. You should be able to, you know, officiate blessed unions between people who are drunk, who just met, haven't gone through any of the onerous rigors of premarital counseling, and they're really just there for, you know, getting a picture for their Insta stories, their snaps. But little do they know that they just honored God with their vows, and that Elvis impersonator, really, should we be calling them impersonators at this point? I feel like it's more of an identity that if you're born that way and people are saying you're impersonating Elvis, I mean, that's pretty offensive. I don't know about you, but anyway, we've got these people we need to advocate for, and they have found an audience and a receptive government officiating crew in our little group of legal umpires.
We certainly jumped all over this thing. I mean, it's a matter of rights. If you're born an Elvis, you're always an Elvis, especially if you've been born a Pastor Elvis or a Reverend Elvis. And an Elvis is gonna do what an Elvis is gonna do. And that's one of the most important things for Elvis in his whole life, was to honor the sanctity of marriage. And I don't know of anything that's more biblical than that. I mean, think, just look down this list for a second. Impersonating a king, that's biblical. Performing weddings, that's biblical. Operating a chapel in Vegas with a steady flow of cash income and being given tax exemptions, also biblical. So as far as I'm concerned, it's just another way for this secular leftist society to really remove religion straight out of this city.
As we operate in this hollowed out husk of a shell of the city council, we don't necessarily have law or regulation writing abilities. We certainly don't see ourselves as part of any legislature, but we can make proclamations. And I feel like, what a time to live in, to be a powerless government entity that yet has the power of the pen. We don't have the power of the purse. Wouldn't want to carry a purse anyway. Carry a wallet in my back pocket like any real man. But we have the power of proclamations, and we've been making a few of these proclamations and getting some good response too. I think we've been able to to draw in some attention towards Las Vegas that it wouldn't have otherwise been getting.
I think we're going to see an incredible breakthrough for these Elvises, and they're going to go from Jailhouse Rock back to their Hunka Hunka Burning Love. And we just see it as a huge privilege of being in this position of authority that we're in right now, and a proclamation, as you said there, TJ. Another big issue that we've had to face right up against, and this is coming from a global character, and that is the Elon Musk public transport tunnels that are going to be dug all through Las Vegas. I know that this whole thing's been criticized as kind of a Tower of Babel in reverse, as we're like digging deep down as a means of getting to heaven. I really think with more of an ordained spiritual glasses on, we need to understand that this is not just public transportation, but there is something much deeper that's gone on to bring this about. As you know, a lot of the movies that we watch and consume are actually indirect prophecies that will come true. Take, for example, Independence Day. That will come true one day. Take, for example, Armageddon. Same thing. Okay, in this case, there was the movie Tremors. Took place in Nevada, and some of you may remember it, where there was this big monster that was digging tunnels through the desert, and Kevin Bacon had to fight him off. Lo and behold, these tunnels that have been already dug, under Las Vegas, I believe, came about from a Tremors monster who is now deceased. I feel firmly about this because, as you remember, we took part in one of them spiritual confrontations of those dark prophets of Vegas known as magicians. And I believe that on that night, we delivered such a blow to Satan and his dark giants that every Dagon and Dracula, every Leviathan and Lucifer would have been cut down within a 50-mile radius. And in our prayers, I think we seem to have killed that Leviathan that made them tunnels, saving the city. And lo and behold, Elon Musk wants to profit off it.
Well, praise Jesus for his desire to profit, but curse him for getting in the way of ours. Because really, I think whenever human beings succeed in killing a Godzilla or killing a Tremor, you know, or killing a Mecha Godzilla or a Megalodon or a Mothra or, you know, any such truck, we got to share the credit and the benefits. You know, if you kill an enormous underground burrowing worm and then somebody comes in with an even greater evil of public transportation, trying to make it easy from getting place to place, then we got to say no. We want your gigafactory here. We want the economic input, but we don't want you to be the sole profiter off of our prophetic prayers that have caused that profit that we prophesied. And I guess some people are calling those gigafactories gigafactories right now. I don't know. Have you heard that one, Rudy? I don't know how to pronounce these things. Gigafactory, gigafactory.
It's very confusing in these parts with there are some certain giga this and giga that I believe are actually a paid service. So I've been trying to steer clear of that in an attempt to not get myself in an embarrassing situation. But I follow you, what you're saying. It's a tough pronunciation right there.
You know, and if Elon Musk is listening today, all we got to say is you had better not bring in any new evils, better not connect to any tunnels that have live tremors in them, or else they'll be hell to pay. And one last note, if you so find the time, Mr. Musk, we do hope for a Hyperloop tunnel intersection station right outside Mesquite Avenue. That would be great.
Indeed, indeed. Well, there's a whole bunch of other items that we could go into depth about, but we just wanted to draw your attention to a few of them just right quick here. And if you pay attention to our social medias, you can track some of these things. One of which is we're going to have the first edition of the secondhand crypto swap meet on our own property where there'll be some opportunities to get rid of some of your cryptos in exchange for others, and there'll be our own celestial cyber sectionals flying around there. So that's an important one.
Yeah, currently trading at 16 Dogecoin per every celestial cyber sectional right now.
That's right. In addition, we also are presenting an anti-vax police passport for the police, because we need to know how many folks isn't bugged in case the global government's listening in on our police. So we're going to try to find out through an anti-vax passport specifically for the police which ones of them is clean.
I love that.
As well as, you know, our hometown WNBA Las Vegas Aces. I mean, Las Vegas Aces. Sorry about that. They play at the wonderful Mandalay Bay Michelob Ultra Arena. And we have a petition to name it. And we're getting a lot of names on this. A lot of feedback, too. We're going to be naming it the Pat Buchanan Mandalay Bay Michelob Ultra Arena. With out in front, this is a separate petition, a statue of Pat dunking on Rachel Maddow. And so we're excited about that one. And then finally, as far as my dossier is concerned here, we want to be asking that the police reopen the file on Ocean's 11 and reclaim some of those lost funds that were taken by them boys at the Bellagio. I feel like there's enough evidence now that we can pin them. And I really feel like it would be a tribute to the city and the taxpayers and the casinos.
I love that. You know, there's only so many sequels you can go through before you say, why aren't they in jail? You know, these people have been speeding up and down the roads for about 13 Fast and Furious movies. And I want to just know, how come I'm still getting parking tickets and these guys are Tokyo drifting up parking garages and launching off into space?
Someone better put their foot down and say, hey, Fast and Furious, you better don't.
Now, a couple items on my side of the docket here that we're working on, getting some feedback on, sending out some Elvises to proclaim to the street corners. I think that the condom dispenser and the broken down abandoned CVS across the way on Mesquite Avenue ought to get refilled, but with half broken condoms, you know, where half of them are good and half of them don't work at all. Because what you meant for evil, God meant for good. We need some trust building difficulties built into our daily life. So if you're going into that abandoned, broken down CVS with water squirting up all over the Band-Aid counter, I think that if you take a condom out of that condom dispenser for 75 cents, it should only work half the time. Because really, what are you doing? Why are you in this broken down CVS? Number two on my list, motion activated audiobook Bible that's turned all the way up to 11 as soon as people walk by. It's just on continuous play, gives you about a 20 second burst as you go by, and we're just going to leave it up to the Holy Spirit as to whether that passage had any relevance to you, but I think that would just be one of those, you know, falling into the pit, God's reaching out and grabbing you, getting hold of you, kind of things.
Can you imagine someone just walking by and you say something like, you hear something like, get behind me, Satan. That'd scare someone so bad, but I think it would scare them to the core of thinking, what on earth? And is Satan behind me? And there's no telling the testimonies that could come out of something so incredible like that. I love that. I absolutely love it.
Right. I just soiled my pants and found the nearest church. That would be the start of the perfect testimony to me. Anyway, number three here on what we want is a community service, really. I'm calling these rear view beer goggles, where they make everybody look a whole lot worse, you know, no matter how drunk you are. So it just helps you make better decisions. And you just think, oh my goodness, I'm just looking at the back of somebody's hairy head. And yet that's right. The least attractive person, least attractive part of any person, of course, is the back of their head. That's all these goggles would tell you. Fourth item up, we're going to make Cross Vegas into a Pokemon Go gym. You know, I say it's time. It's time to catch up to what the kids are doing. So that way, when you're attending church and we send out push notifications about new prophecies we're putting out, new podcast episodes, you're already looking at your phone at church and you just see it on the screen during the service. That would just be the most direct means of communication we got. So that would bring in the younger generation, you know, the people who are maybe 35 or so when the game came out in 2018, but now they're mature, but they're young at heart. And that's the type of congregant we want these days.
That's right. And I just love that because it is relevant. We're kind of meeting people where they're at we're striking while the iron's hot, as you mentioned. It was a popular game and it still is. And I've learned a lot even since we started this initiative. I didn't know what a Scarzars was, and I'm loving it. And so I've been, I spend a minute or morning and afternoon playing on it. But more than anything, it's a way to connect to the people and to really give everyone an opportunity to come onto our property and be blessed.
This is the day that our brand new, future-looking, past-understanding, present-illuminating new segment, How Many Four Horsemen, drops on the podcast for the first time. And I think we just owe our listeners a little backstory, a little explanation here, because it's not immediately obvious to the uneducated public what's going on with four horsemen and why we might want to count up the sets of four horsemen. So here's what it is in a nutshell. Open up your Bibles, turn to Revelation of St. John, the 6th chapters, and read along with me here. And I saw and behold a white horse, and he that sat on him had a bow, and a crown was given unto him, and he went forth conquering and to conquer. And when he had opened the second seal, I heard the second beast say, and these beasts have been referred to in earlier parts of chapter 6 and chapter 5. You've got to look that up separately. But anyway, the beast says, come and see. And there went out another horse that was crimson, and power was given him that sat thereon to take peace from the earth, and that they should kill one another. And there was given unto him a great sword. And when he had opened the third seal, and these are seals like on an envelope, listener here. These are not like barking seals at the zoo. These are seals on an envelope.
Not a sea lion. Or an elephant seal.
Not a sea lion, but we don't know what the creatures are, the four creatures. You can look that up earlier and read some of our commentary on it. Anyway, right back into verse 5. And I beheld, and lo, a black horse, and he that sat on him had a pair of balances in his hand. And I heard a voice in the midst of the four beasts. That's the original four beasts, not the four horses that the four horsemen are riding right now. Some other four beasts, you're going to have to look that up separately. A measure of wheat for a penny and three measures of barley for a penny. And see thou hurt not the oil and wine. And when he being one of those original beasts that was just referred to earlier, that's what he's saying here. And when he had opened the fourth seal, I heard the voice of the fourth beast say, come and see. And I looked and beheld the pale horse, and his name that sat on him was death, and hell followed after him. And power was given unto them over the fourth part of the earth. Now that doesn't mean like the fourth horse, that's like a quarter. That's how they used to say that in the Authorized Version in the 1600s. To kill with sword and with hunger and with death and with the beasts of the earth. Now, those aren't the four beasts, the heavenly beasts that are doing these proclamations. These are just the regular beasts chinchillas and so forth that we always like to talk about, regular beasts. Anyway, here ends the reading. So, clear as day, everybody knows this passage, everybody knows what's going on. It's really about what's happening at the end of the world, and which of these scenarios, is it the death one, is it the balances one, is it the power one, or is it the conquering and to conquer one? Which one's going on and which one's bringing in the end?
Put this in layman's terms. When we say horsemen, we're not talking about cowboys. And we're also not talking about centaurs, because a centaur has the body of a horse and then the torso and up of a man. This is the opposite, where you have the body of a man and then the torso and upwards of a horse.
So when we say that there's, for example, 3-4 horsemen, we say things are pretty bad. Right, Rudy? So when some event happens and we want to say this event portends that there are 2 horsemen, well, that's not quite so bad. You don't have to quite look up at the sky right at that moment to see the Lord coming for to judge the unrighteousness of the earth. But if we say there's 4 horsemen, that's when you got to start looking up skywards and start putting on your Sunday best.
Yeah, that's like, bases are loaded, baby. Watch out.
Grand slam of the spirit. So really, when we're prophesying the end of the world, we need to get ready for it. So what's the best way? What should we be doing? Hoarding homemade cures, taking every black market vaccine we can get, setting up prayer bots to flame the libs from anonymous truth social handles, setting up shell companies, getting high on epinephrine. In other words, bearing fruit in the Holy Spirit according to the grace of our Lord Jesus.
If you want to really see this personified, just look at what we've been up to in season 1. It's those sort of things, because we want to be ready and we want to be about the Lord's business.
All I have is yours, Lord. Right, Rudy? Every minute of the day is devoted towards bringing fame to His name and renown to this town.
TJ, some people might be wondering, well, how do I look at the signs and tell how near the rapture is coming? How near to the end are we? We get a lot of questions about that, and some people are not as discerned as others. So what would you say to someone like that?
Well, you're already doing the right thing by listening to this podcast. You are getting insights and information here that you will hear literally nowhere else. No church in America is going to tell you what we're telling you. Practically no politician, though. Now that we're part of city council, I guess that's not technically true anymore. And for tax purposes, you are hearing it from a church, the Amalgamated Enterprises of the Greater Southwest, so forth, so on. You know how we play our LLC game. But really, what you need to know is the type of thing that you'll find on the RaptureReadyIndex.com. And this has been an incredible resource for us. So let me break that down for you. You got categories of things that kind of add up to a rapture-ready score. So think of the categories like, is the economy okay? Are there plagues? How many earthquakes are happening? How powerful is Gog and Magog? Think about like Russia and Iran or who knows what there. How's the financial sector? How's the culture sector? Are we seeing that Israel is doing good or doing bad? All those kind of categories, and you give them each a score, and then you add that up, and then your total is kind of your rapture risk factor.
You just have to download this app. Download this app there. It's all over the App Store. And it's a more important metric and indicator than even the Weather Channel, because, you know, it's like the Weather Channel of the unseen world. Instead of reading the barometric pressures or the heat index, this gives you a numerical rapture index. And it's so useful. It's kind of like when your dad used to check the stock market after school, and then he'd go down into his man cave for the rest of the night and play grumpy music while your mom quickly barricaded the liquor cabinet and told you kids to play outside. It's like that, but you don't need to wait till after school to check it, because you can be checking it every minute of the day, wondering, are we getting a little bit closer? What is that number? And you get all these readings in one place. I mean, it's been so hard to get a solid global apostasy reading these days, let alone a anti-Semitism figure or a tribulation temple metric. But with a rapture ready index, it's all there with actual data, no guessing and no speculative prophecy.
Think of it like a 200 point scale. And I'm not going to startle you too much to say I think that we're at 189 as of this recording, 189. And they say anything under 120 means no man knoweth the hour, and you can really take it easy and not pay attention to anything really in the second half of the Bible. But if it's over 160, where we are now, that category has a name. It's called, hold on, you're in for a wild ride.
It's like, that thief is coming and it's night. So look out, it's gonna get started.
Behold, he cometh riding on the wind. That's kind of the vibe I get from the advice that site starts to put out around about the high 180s on the meter there. And you know, I've seen a couple articles like that just start out with the phrase, look up. Now, what good advice, right? Like, imagine you didn't look up on the day the Lord was returning for to judge the unrighteousness of the world. You make it halfway to work, you're stuck in some end of times traffic, paying these gas prices before you realize he's already landed somewhere else. And you're just kicking yourself, right? Because you're like, I could have stayed home, slept in, gotten my affairs in order, gotten out of my PJs, and then come out to meet Jesus as if you didn't see him out the window walking up towards your door.
It's about being ready. That's right. DJ, it's about being ready. And I think all of our listeners are going to get on board. And I just want to say that as a side note, we are getting no special benefit. There's no sponsorship for the Rapture Ready Index. We just love it this much that we're going to promote it this big.
You know, people are always complaining, Rudy, about how evangelicals, especially the charismatic kind, don't care enough about science. But you and I are the perfect counterexample of that, because we've had about 1,800 vaccine shots by this recording, I think. But then this is an even perfecter example where you've got math in those categories. And I tested out the sums, and I can confirm they add up to the scores. All right, those individual categories do in fact average up to those scores. And how's this for accuracy? The meter has never reached 200, and the rapture has never occurred. That is a 100% accurate model right there.
No need to question this thing. We have done the math. We've done the hard study. We've broken it down. And take a look for yourself.
All right, now that we've given you the explanation, dear listener, let's get into our two categories of rating today. So, Rudy, how many Four Horsemen to you does the Roe versus Wade decision being overturned represent?
To be quite frank, I'm seeing three horsemen coming up on the horizon when I heard about Roe v. My goodness, it's very revealing in terms of who's good and who's bad in our nation. I had no idea that in this joyous moment we would be able to not only get a decision handed down, but most importantly, to really know where states stand in terms of being good or evil.
I don't know if it moves the index up or down. I feel like it gives me a sense of, you know, I think I'm at 3.5, 4 horsemen on this one, just because there's two things going on. Does it help America become a Christian nation because of the court's decision? That could send it one way. Or does it help America fall apart to such an extent that the end times disasters foretold in the scriptures just start to happen because there's no America preventing them? I feel like either way, it's good for us, right? Like, either the government has decided which religion everyone has to have, or we have a civil war. Win-win, right?
It's a total win-win. There's no downside to this whatsoever. It's either going to bring about the end by America becoming heaven on earth, or as you mentioned, it's going to just bring about the total destruction and depravity, bringing on the rapture.
Couldn't have said it better. All right, we got an average of 3.2 Four Horsemen there on that one. All right, how about this crypto collapse? Now, you think that as minters of crypto, we might be freaking out a little bit. You know, line goes up to the moon, all that. We've been saying that for years, even before those became the internet memes that we've been seeing. But what do you think about this crypto collapse we're in the middle of here? How many four horsemen, Rudy?
Well, I see two four horsemen, TJ, the way I see it is if you're investing your talents in the unseen, you're essentially getting your name written into that book of life, that financial ledger of life called the blockchain, which I believe could translate in a soul being put into the actual book of life. So I believe in a connection between storing your treasures in heaven and finding your own self in heaven. And just like there's ups and downs in our walk of faith, times when our faith is strong and we're feeling strong, crypto's strong, but then there's other times when we wake up in a gutter and have to dust ourselves off and get a shower at the Planet Fitness to make it to church on time to preach. And, you know, we have those highs and those lows. I just feel like when people are wrapped into crypto, they're able to fully have a tangible representation of faith.
Oh, that's beautiful. You know, the blockchain being like you're written in the Lamb's Book of Life. I love that. I love that. You belong, you know, on the blockchain in an immutable manner, as they say. All your dark web consumer behavior and frantic laundering of assets between sock puppet accounts is who you are before the Almighty. You know, and when he returns in power and glory, he won't even have to be omniscient. He'll just glance at the blockchain and have a pretty good idea where humanity stands. What do you think about that, Rudy?
Amen, amen. I think that is the way it is, because all this time we've been wondering, where is this book of life? Where is this Lamb's Book of Life? And I believe that the Lord has blessed us with sending it to us in this manner, in this time, in this way.
I believe, you know, if we're saving him some precious time at judgment time, he's going to like that. I think he might overlook a few of those dark web transactions just on that basis. And you know, something I've been thinking about, this crypto stuff. When I hand over all my cash to God at the end of time, I don't want it to be worthless. You know, that seems like the unwise servant who just buried the gold talent in the ground and then produced the same back to the landowner. Right? So, like, crypto's going to be worth a ton once this Armageddon stuff starts going, right? So, why would you want God to have your worthless dollars that you hoarded in the meantime? Saves him a packet at the currency exchange. All right, last thing you want to do is hand over a bunch of worthless inflated greenbacks. Why not send those towards us, do a little exchange for some celestial cyber sections, and then you're golden in so many ways.
And absolutely, because we have guaranteed that there is a matching that will go on in heaven. So for every celestial cyber sectional that you purchase, there will be one that is matched waiting for you in heaven for you to hand over at the pearly gates.
You know, and I was just thinking about that treasure in heaven, treasure in the cloud. That's what I think we should get a little trademark or service mark on, don't you? Because it's like, you know, heaven just used to mean the sky. And what's in the sky? Clouds. And what about this incorruptible cloud-based money, treasure up in the heavens, where moths do not eat, rust does not corrupt, and thieves do not break in and steal? You know, except if the thieves are the ones with the cloud-based crypto and they're holding your hard drive for ransom, or if they try hard enough, but at least no moth or rust.
That's right. There's no moth or rust going to tear through your crypto wallet. I mean, well, there might be some, you know, ups and downs, but in truth, physically, nothing will happen to it.
And with crypto, it's super secure. It's not like you're leaving your car on the side of the road with the keys in the ignition. It's like super secret spy stuff. Like, I keep my Bitcoin and my Celestial Cyber Sectionals key written down on a Post-it note stuck to the outside of my phone. You know, it falls off from time to time, but I always write it up on a fresh one and put it right back on there. And I am the only one who knows that password, which happens to be the word password, but with some unusual characters after it, which are my birthday. But only my inner circle of followers on Twitter have access to that. So this is super secret spy stuff, super secure.
And that Cyrillic O that you use in password, I believe, is the real key to how secure that thing is.
Yeah, so I'm going to give this crypto collapse 1 Four Horsemen. I'm going to go way low on this because, you know, no one told these bankers and investors that this was a reliable store of money. That was just all their wishful thinking. So I think that this current collapse is just an apparent failure that masks a hidden spiritual reality. We've seen that in the elections. We've seen that in so many ways. Not very many things going our way on the surface, but behind the scenes, everything is coming up daisies. Dear people of this nation, we have come together for the true national pastime. It's not football, it's not lacrosse, it is turnt or burnt. What do we got up first here, Rudy?
Our first topic actually comes to us from at WWJD_NickelbackAttack. What do y'all think about this monkeypox business? And I'm so glad that WWJD Nickelback Attack brought this up, because there's been a lot of hokey stuff in the news about monkeypox. Lots of incorrect lies swirling around about us, like the virus was caused by the COVID vaccine. And I want to tell all of y'all that you heard it here first. You heard it here first. That is just wrong. You can't get monkeypox from a COVID vaccine. And if anyone could tell you, it's us. Because we've had all of them over 100 times. And we all know that you really contract the monkeypox by having relations with a monkey while the monkey has chickenpox. I'm gonna tell you that even though that is the case, I'm still calling this burnt. Because, TJ, I'm afraid. You know, like COVID, I'm afraid of this thing mutating and becoming more contagious. And what if I get it? Then everyone gonna think I'm one of them preverts, and now my whole ministry and reputation takes a dive after all that hard work I've done to maintain, build, and reclaim and resurrect my reputation. I don't believe there's any coming back from that kind of rumor. I'm just gonna say it right now, burnt, but what do you think?
At first, I thought this would be turnt because I thought, you know, they are going to release for free a new vaccine to the American public. And that always gets me a little riled up with my morning devotional when I'm scrolling through Twitter and I see something like, oh, there's a new disease out there. And then guess what? They already got a vaccine for it. But, you know, I am afraid this is burnt because I bet we're going to be excluded, not because of our beliefs, because we're as pro-vaccine as you can get, but because of our behavior, our Christianity. Because we're not going to get invited to any of these bisexual raves where the disease will be spread, and therefore we don't need the vaccine. Or so says the CDC. So when the CDC talks about bisexual raves as a prerequisite, that is religious discrimination. Because right there, you got a whole lot of things that I don't have any truck with. You got glitter, you got glow sticks, you got loud music. All this stuff that the Bible says is burnt up, and you're saying I can't get medicine because of that? I do not like that one bit.
That's a very interesting take, and I like that. We always have to be on the lookout for that very, very secretive discrimination, a cloaked discrimination, as I call it. So, well, I'm glad we're in agreement on that one. All right, TJ, what's our next subject?
You know, we brought up, back when we were talking about our Native American friends a couple episodes ago, we really went through an education, I would have to say, on that topic. We have grown in our sensitivity towards the other inferior races like you wouldn't believe. And so When we brought up the Cleveland professional baseball team changing their names, we didn't think much of it, but you got researching, I got researching, and now we find this is happening all over the country since about 1997. So we want to get into and do a little sub-turnt-or-burnt per name change on a bunch of professional teams that have been changing their names, usually for political correctness reasons.
Woke reasons, in fact. And I do consider myself a changed man, as what you said. So obviously the first one is the Guard Indians, the Cleveland Guard Indians.
You can't spell Guard Indians without Indians. I feel like they're just being cheap. I say this one is burnt. They're just being cheap because they're like, what word or letters can we add at the beginning of the name of the, you know, existing name so we don't have to reprint all our gear and our promotions? I think that's just cheap. This is like what they could have been, like the Cleveland Indianapolises, just as easily, but maybe that's confusing in a kind of geographical, logical way.
I mean, did the Cleveland Indiana Joneses not want any of that? That's what I was wondering there. So I agree with you. That's totally burnt. We got the new one, the Washington Commanders. Now, this one really got me going because, first of all, I didn't see a huge problem with Redskins other than the fact that it doesn't properly portray the whole team. If you want to be politically correct, then we can just call them the Washington White Skins, Black Skins, Brown Skins, and Pacific Skins. And just naming those four just for short, the Washington Four Skins. So I would say Commanders, that's burnt, because they really should have just been a little more literal about it.
I got one correction for you there. We talk to some Australians from time to time as they come through town partying, and the new thing instead of Pacificans is Austro-Oceanic Islander Pacificans. I just learned that the other day. I thought that was interesting, but I do agree that this is burnt because it's just so generic. It's so snowflakey. Like, everyone on the team is a commander now. Like, who are the players who are going to be willing to fight to the death as soldiers on the gridiron? You know, at least suffer severe brain damage upon the slightest whim of their coaches, not a bunch of people who think they've, you know, got insights on how the country is in which they play, you know, how to play the game, or like what the meaning of life is, you know, all that kind of stuff. You don't need these guys thinking about. Everybody's a commander now. I want a team that's called Soldiers with One Commander.
Ooh, I like that, because we don't want a team that celebrates the guy on the sidelines with the Boilermaker. We want to celebrate the one on the field.
Exactly.
Amen.
Exactly. All right, the Washington Bullets becoming the Washington Wizards in 1997.
Oh, that was completely burnt. How can you take away our right to bear arms and then exchange it with witchcraft? Just ridiculous.
It's a shameless branding tie-in with the release of the first Harry Potter book. I mean, you don't get any more money grubby than that. You go from Americana, you know, now those Washingtonians, those Washington, D.C. residents, they got one big bullet-shaped hole in their heart where their team used to be, and now they just got these tumbledores coming down, wearing their crazy robes, cosplaying, LARPing all over the stadium. It's like a Star Wars convention in there instead of an inner-city basketball game.
I mean, if Michael Jordan was around, he would have absolutely nothing to do with that trash.
Well, so far, all burnt. What do we got here? We got the Tampa Bay Devil Rays dropping the devil, dropping it like it's hot. Just become the Tampa Bay Rays. They immediately won the pennant in 2008, so this one is turnt, because what a testimony of what happens when you finally take some steps of obedience in faith. You win the GD pennant once the D part of that's out of there.
Amen. You go striper on the whole league, and you say, to hell with the devil, and we're winning the pennant, baby. I love it. So that's totally turnt right there. Another one for you is the Seattle Supersonics not only changed their name, but their sport went from basketball to hockey and became the Kraken.
I don't like it when there's these slurs against white people. You know, it's one thing, like, I'm hearing all the time, like, you can't say this, can't say that. Only the group who's using it ironically and self-referentially, you know, in a joking kind of repositioning the meaning of the word way can use it. But I don't go around calling you a cracker.
That's true, but you know them Seattle folks, I think the rule is they can say it, but other people can't. I don't know, but I'll agree with you. It's burnt. It's not a national word that we can all use. Then we go down to the Montreal Exposed changing themselves to the Washington Nationals.
I have to say there's a turnt aspect and a burnt aspect, mostly turnt. It started out burnt because there's an unholy union when you're speaking French and trying to play baseball at the same time. Like, what are the bases even called at that point? You know, like, un, deux, trois, and what do you call home base? It's like, do you, what are we even doing here, you know, at a certain point? But when America stole something from Canada, I can get behind that.
Oh, absolutely. That's a total turner right there. That is turnt as can be, and I love that one. There's plenty of other notable ones, and I'm just going to fire through a couple of them, one being that the Arizona Diamondbacks became the D-bags, which obviously is just burnt because it's in bad form and poor taste. But in basketball, there was the Hornets becoming the Pelicans, and this, although on the surface may seem like somewhat innocuous, I believe there really is some deep evil stuff going on with that.
Yeah, I agree. That is burnt. Primarily because of evolution. You know, you got one winged creature in the Hornet turning into another winged creature in the Pelican. You know, sometimes when the skips between species are really big, like bullets to wizards, you don't worry about that bringing evolution to people's minds. Maybe except for like a gun turning into a wand, maybe that's kind of an equivalency. But when a Hornet, a little winged creature, becomes a Pelican, a big winged creature, you know that they're pushing their evolutionary Darwinian dogma.
It just doesn't make sense. And I believe they doubled down on it again when they went from, okay, fine, Hornets, Pelicans, oh, we need another team, Bobcats, then back to Hornets, as if this whole evolution thing is some circle. And that's, you know what that said to me? Hinduism. Evolutionary Hinduism.
Yeah, anytime there's a circle of life, you say, oh, Lion King, oh, Disney, oh, Pride Parade. All right, we had two fellers we follow on the socials. And let me just say, following on the socials has been fraught with difficulty recently. You know, first, I'm following Cobra Strike Force of our forefathers 69 one day, and then he's gone the next day, and I try to find him, and it's like somebody else has tweeted out he's been suspended for glorifying violence and spreading, you know, medicine disinformation. And I'm like, how? I can get some followers. I just can't stay the follower of anybody else for long with this current political climate. But before he went offline for good, Cobra Strike Force, I should say, let me correct myself, at Cobra Strike Force of our forefathers 69 was tweeting out about White History Month. He wants there to be a U.S. holiday all month long. Haven't figured out the month, whichever is the whitest one, maybe like a snowy month or like where there's a white hot heat month. I don't know, something somewhere in between there. A White History Month. Is that turn to burnt, Rudy?
Well, TJ, I'm so glad that you have latched on to this, because this is something I've been thinking about in my heart for a long time, but I never had the courage to say publicly. But I'm so glad that there is a movement towards that. It's given me the courage to talk about this, and I really do believe that this is something that's needed. We all know that in this day and age, white history has been suppressed. It's been deleted, it's been canceled, and this is a way to bring it back, focusing on some very specific white people in our history that sometime fly under the radar. And this will really help to, I believe, give people the confidence to realize that their heritage truly is supreme. Well, I guess what I mean by that is it's good and it's honorable.
So we're thinking, who can we elevate? You know, there's a couple of famous white people around. Who can we elevate who was a really, really important white person from our history? I was thinking all the way back to St. Augustine. I think he'd be a great one to get in there. A little further in our church history, further, Martin Luther King Jr., inventor of Lutheranism, inventor of civil
the
rights.
The European one, right?
Yeah. Martin Luther King Jr., the German priest who defected from Catholicism.
The journey he made from Europe to the United States, to Atlanta, in and of itself is the inspiration that we need.
Right, and that is an unwritten history right there. I can't believe I've never seen a history book that tells a story of how young Martin Luther nailed up his 95 Theses, got on that boat, came over, learned himself English, and then led a whole social movement to eradicate racism for good in America. That is quite a story.
And moving through history, we have a couple more. One being Freddie Mercury, a musician. But then getting into more modern times, closer to modern times, Obama's mom. Mm. The mother of a president.
Yeah, there's no better role to play. Isn't it Mrs. Adams, you know, John Quincy Adams' mother and the wife of the original John Adams Sr., who came up with some sort of way of doing the flag that we still use? There's a lot of wonderful presidents' mothers out there, but I feel like Obama's mom has not gotten the credit she deserves for giving him what he needed to become president, which was a significant amount of light skin.
And I would say, for that matter, we also need to include Tiger Woods as his mom for the role that she played in his life and helping to bring him back from some of his trials and tribulations.
You know, probably my favorite white person of all time that just does not have any holiday yet, which is incredible given his popularity, is Michael Jackson. I think that we need to honor those who have identified as white later in life, even though maybe at the beginning times that wasn't what their family wanted them to do. You know, we need to honor that bravery to say, you know, you didn't have a childhood, and so apparently that means you don't need to acknowledge that you grew up in a certain family, and guess what? The magic of plastic surgery is what allows you into a whole new life, a whole new set of folks, other white folks.
And we all know that he died as a white man, and it's kind of like the Hall of Fame, where you get inducted according to the team that you played for last, and the same thing applies here. He passed away from us as a white man, and we need to celebrate that decision he did make later in life to become white. And then, of course, maybe the biggest celebrity that we celebrate as white folks right now is The Rock. Dwayne Johnson, the things that he's done, he's made his way from football into wrestling, through the movies. He's just everywhere, business mogul, really everything that any man could ever want to be.
Turn to Burnt, the He Gets Us $100 million ad campaign to bring fame to the name of Jesus, to build the strongest Christian brand that you ever seen. Is this $100 million ad campaign, He Gets Us, is this Turn to Burnt?
Well, it's a very difficult one, actually. I think on the surface we would say that it is turnt. And I've done a lot of prayer and meditation about this, but I still have a dark feeling in my heart about this, to be honest, because I believe that if you're going to spend that kind of cash, it's only proper to look at the market and see who could help and who's already doing it. And I'm just feeling like we were betrayed by not getting that phone call, which leads me therefore to believe that the folks behind this are not truly ordained, or else they would have asked us first to be a part of it, because it's exactly what we're doing.
Right. It's like, we're trying to do that. Don't you see us down here struggling away? And these guys are going old school media. We got billboards and targeted ads, you know, reminding us that Christianity exists. And there's probably a website somewhere up there that explains it. And you know what? That, I don't know if that's the wake-up call we need as a nation. Do we really need to just be reminded of the existence of Christians and websites about them? Or do we need something more?
You know, it's one thing to do the billboards and thing, you know, paths we've already taken. It's another thing to say, you know what? Let's really utilize the technology. Let's go with bots. Let's go up with pop-ups on websites, you know, the type of stuff that really gets people going and gets them on board.
The one thing that I do like about this, Rudy, and I'm going to give it a little micro-turnt on this, macro-burnt, micro-turnt, I like that it's showing the world that evangelical Christians, one, have a lot of money, and two, are willing to burn it on vanity projects in our legacy years. That shows blessing. That shows favor, that shows guts. And I think all those missionaries out there making $15,000 a year have to be saying a big thank you to these mega spenders. Thank you for showing us how it's done. All right, Rudy, here's a little bonus surprise turn to burn. The famous fragranceur, that's not what they're called, but you know what I'm saying. The guy who makes perfume over in France. There's a couple of guys over there making some new splashy splashes, one of which is causing some upset in the papacy, and this is a fragrance called Jesus's Feet. Now, this one's all about Mary Magdalene breaking open the nard, the year's worth of wages, weirdo nard. I don't even know what that is. It sounds like it came out of a whale or something, but this nard breaks over Jesus's feet, and then what would Jesus's feet smell like, presumably in addition to the nard, once it's combined with his feet smell?
I know that within the social medias, we're all familiar with a good thirst trap. I believe this whole premise is a bit of a smell trap. And here's the reason why. This is a complicated subject, because if I go burnt on this, right between my eyes, I'm going to get that judgment saying that, kind of the Judas sort of comment where I'm saying you could have done any type of smell, but you decided to pour all that fragrance right there on the feet. I don't think I can rightly say that it's burnt for fear of being judged by Jesus. But then if I say that it's turnt, am I aligning myself with a woman who has a sordid past and the fragrance of her on my body, that being the fragrance from her hair as it fell on his feet? And thus, I might be aligning myself with, you know, some of the places within this city that we like to minister to, the brothels, if you will. They're, you know, a part of our ministry, we would say. Am I aligning myself too closely with them so that I smell as they smell? Not that I would know what they smell like, but so that I would smell as they smell. And so for that reason, it's a smell trap. But at the end of the day, I'm going to say, I don't want to be judged by man. Ultimately, I'm going to be judged by Jesus. So therefore, I have to say it's turnt.
Wow. I did not expect that level of depth of analysis. I think that your biblical knowledge is really second to none. On this fragrance, I think that it's turnt, but you know what I would do with this? I wouldn't fragrancize anything with it. I wouldn't make anything smell like Jesus' feet. I would just leave it in the bottle, label out on my bookshelf, just to show people, like, I would have done what Mary Magdalene did, but I've still got it bottled up for the second coming. So I'm gonna do it. I don't have to smell his feet right now. I don't have to break it open right now, but I'm gonna do it. And you know it, because I got it already labeled on my shelf, ready to go.
Oh man, that is wise. I'm talking iron sharpening iron right here. That is wonderful, because see what you're doing there is you're tying it back to what we talked about before. You're ready for the second coming. You're seeing the signs. And this is one of those readiness things that you're doing. And you've just aligned yourself so beautifully. I got to hand it to you, my brother. TJ, that was brilliant.
Well, you are a blessing to me every day, dear brother. Folks, you are a blessing to us as well. And we do appreciate your Patreon patronage. We do appreciate your crypto crafting. We do appreciate every dollar that you send by mail, by fax, by check, every form of it. Please keep sending those dollars and we will keep cranking out this fragrance for you.
You have been listening to Cross Vegas. I'm Rudy along with TJ and we've been coming to you from the Big Smoke, Las Vegas. We'll see you next time.